If you work across schools or treatment facilities and you want an environment characterized by students or clients behaving well and meeting their goals, you need Everyday Behavior Tools. These tools are so powerful and generalizable that you can train anybody, anywhere in them. And here is the best part. The entire instructor training is online. If you are interested in becoming an Everyday Behavior Tools trainer to improve behavior in your organization while also generating more income for yourself, go to crisisintervention.com.
Welcome to the Crisis in Education podcast, where educational leaders and experts across the world dissect the root causes of issues and explore potential opportunities for sustainable improvement across schools and districts. And now your co-hosts, Dr. Pauly and Drew.
All right. Welcome to the Crisis in Education podcast. I'm your co-host, Dr. Pauly. I'm here with Drew Carter. Drew, how you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Pauly.
Yeah, good to see you as always, although I see you every day, at least virtually, man. But when we get to spend time together, it's always fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks at the conference. I don't know if this will be published. Yeah, this will be published before then, so this won't be outdated. For any of our behavior analyst friends that might be tuning in, make sure you come out and check us out. We'll have a booth there for PCMA, and I'll also be giving a couple of talks, and I'd love for you guys to come by and holler at me. But today we are very fortunate to be joined by Richard Byrne. And Richard is a guy, I was out exploring educational influencers, and, you know, Drew and I really want to bring people from, you know, varying backgrounds that have good information to add in about education, because, you know, we really believe that education is a crisis. And his name popped up as being like influencer of the year, you know, in this top 10 influencers in education. So I said, oh, this guy looks interesting. And I checked out his LinkedIn, and he had a lot to talk about technology and how to, you know, help engage worldwide audiences for both students and for both teachers and students in education. So we figured we'd holler at him, and he's been gracious enough to join us. And, you know, Richard, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice to be here. Nice to chat with people about anything. I work in my home office most of the time, so it's nice to, you know, interface with someone who's not a 4 or 5 year old daughter who's, you know, related to me. So.
Listen, man, better than yes, I'm in the same thing, man. This is where I live at in my office here, but I have an 18-year-old who I'd much rather chat with your 4-year-old right now. He's in his jerk years, although I love him to death. So I know we were talking a little bit off air, and I, you know, funny, if you don't know about podcasting or the way that Drew and I approach stuff, it's like we really like to, you know, have our just discussions. We want to keep them organic with folks, and you know, so Richard already gave us some great information. I'm like, whoa, hold up, let's save that for you know, the air. And but, you know, before we get into it, Richard, just give us a little bit about your background so our audiences know what you've done.
Yeah, so this is 20 years of working in public education in some way, shape, or form. I started out as a high school social studies teacher. Taught high school social studies for about 10 years. And in that time, I started a blog, which is probably what I'm best known for, called freetechforteachers.com. I started it kind of by chance, I guess, for lack of a better description. I was trying to fulfill a part of a grant requirement and started writing a blog. And right place, right time, I hit on a topic that people liked. And so now 15 years later, I'm still writing freetechforteachers.com. I also run a website called practicaledtech.com. And both are dedicated to giving teachers practical advice about how to use technology in their classrooms. I chose the name Free Tech for Teachers because I was a broke teacher and I was looking for free things to use in my class to really engage my kids, engage my students. And so that's me in a nutshell. You know, as I've alluded to, I have 2 little girls, a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old. I love to ride my bike. I love to exercise, love to be outside, love to fish. You know, I live in Maine. I tell people that I moved to Maine for a girl and I stayed for the fishing. And sure, you can publish that. you know, so that's me.
Well, good, man. I appreciate your honesty. Oh, man, you got me. For people who can't see, well, first of all, Richard isn't much younger than we are, but he looks like half her age. You know, like life has been better to Richard than us. He looked like we've been through it a little bit. Well, cool, man. Well, welcome, man. That's, you know, like, first of all, it's a shame that, you know, like many teachers that you were broke, you know what I mean? So putting out free stuff for teachers, like, you know, Drew and I talk about this all the time. We've talked about it in other episodes, but what's more important than education? You know, why are teachers so underpaid? It's, teaching is very complex. It's very difficult. You're, you know, trying to teach to 20, 25, 30 kids in a classroom who all have varying needs and, you know, varying histories, and you have all these demands put on you. Like, it's like very, it's complex engineering. Like every second of your day needs to be planned for. If it's not, it creates all sorts of problems for you, for the students, for, you know, it just is, it has a really bad ripple effect, man. So it's cool that you created that free stuff, man.
Well, thanks. And if I could piggyback on what you just said there, I think one of the things to you know, keep in mind for teachers, particularly young teachers, I'll say, because, you know, I went through this as a young teacher, when you're feeling like, gosh, I've got to get a second job in order to keep doing the thing that I love, right? Or, you know, I've got to, you know, really budget where I'm going to drive this weekend because gas is $5 a gallon versus what am I going to do in my classroom? Like that becomes a mental strain on teachers, you know, young teachers, because they're paid less than older teachers, more experienced teachers. But it happens for all of us. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, teachers need to consider, schools need to consider, you know, that overall mental well-being of teachers. And part of that is that stress level.
Well, so that's a great, you know, intro to this, because I thought we were going to be talking about tech stuff. But one of the things that you said was,
we can talk about tech stuff, too, because that is a way to solve some of these problems.
What I'd love that you said offline was, like, you're concerned about educator stress. Right. And so if that is part of the formula, let's get on that. But like right now, what's going on out there as far as stress? Like, what are you seeing in terms of teacher stress or hearing?
I will say that, you know, the last 2 years I taught computer science in our local vocational school. And one of the things that I experienced and saw from a lot of my colleagues, even more so than me, because I was kind of trained in it, was the balancing act of teaching kids who are physically in your classroom while simultaneously teaching kids who are not in your classroom and are Zooming in or Google Meet or what, Microsoft Teams, whatever platform you're using, that balancing act. I was a little more equipped than others because of my background and having, you know, taught online for years now and you know, just the nature of what I do every day in and out. But a lot of teachers are just like, I can't do it, you know, and I know plenty of people who were close to retirement age who just said, yep, this is it. I'm out. This is, you know, and then for others, it's like, gosh, I've got to adapt to this. And that was a huge stressor. Just that balancing act, you know, the balancing act of, you know, not knowing, right. I think, as you already alluded to, like we want to schedule our day. We want to plan our day, especially if you're talking about like elementary school kids, you know, I was teaching high school. They can focus a little bit longer than elementary school kids, but you talk about elementary school and you've got to have every 5 minutes planned out or every 10 minutes planned out. And then all of a sudden, nope, tomorrow you're going to have to do it all online. Right? Like that, I think that was a huge stressor, along with, you know, all the other typical stuff that goes along with teaching of, you know, just, we're all humans and, you can be as empathetic as you want, but it's at some point you get tapped out and you've just got to grind through it.
Well, I mean, I'm first of all, everybody wants predictability in their day. Everybody does, man. When you can predict things that are going to happen, life just gets much easier. And of course, you want to arrange your environment in a way that the predictable outcomes are aligned with what you value. And when you introduce new things to teachers and you don't equip them to be successful, it's going to create all sorts of stress. And then when there's the expectation that they will do this stuff and produce these outcomes, and that just puts on layers and layers and layers of stress. And so, you know, one of the big things that has been the torch that I carry is that you can't tell people what to do and expect that they're going to do it. You can't train them how to do it and expect that they're going to do it. There needs to be follow-up coaching to support this stuff. I've seen lots of money invested in technology. Teachers, it looks good when the tech guy's running. It's like, that's amazing. That's incredible. But then you go back into the classroom, they're not using it. It's not that they don't want to use it. Now they've got to learn how to do that stuff while they're still balancing their class because they weren't trained to fluency outside of that. They were given like an hour training, 2 hour training, whatever it was, and it's not going to stick. So, you know, districts and schools cannot invest in this technology without also invest in a way to support the transference of the knowledge and skills learned into the classroom. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And also one of the things that I think happens from a stress management standpoint, and I should point out that I am not a psychologist. I'm not trained in this. These are my observations from working in a lot of schools. Often what gets cut out are, you know, the things that are most important sometimes, right? Like we want to get this new initiative online, right? Or not online as in online, but we want to get this new initiative running. And like you say, you might get an hour training, a 2 hour training, and you're like, okay, I've got this new thing on my plate. All right, so what's the thing that's going to get cut out so I can make time to put this thing on? And for a lot of teachers, that thing that gets cut is their own personal well-being, right? Like their own, oh, and that's why you see teachers who, and again, not as much with veteran teachers, but some to some extent, but younger teachers, they're at school until 5-6 o'clock at night, or, you know, up, you know, working until 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, and then rolling into school with bloodshot eyes because they, you know, and so, you know, what gets cut out there, that little piece of that personal well-being, because we all want to do as best as we can for our students, right? So we're going to say, boom, all right, I'm not going to get in my 30-minute coffee time with my buddy, or I'm not going to get my 30 minutes of walking around the neighborhood with my dog because I've got to, you know, work on X, Y, or Z thing.
My wife doesn't get home till 8 p.m. most likely. She's an assistant principal. She leaves before 8 a.m. I mean, she's putting on the phone's always ringing, texting or whatever. And like, it's you're right on, man. Those little things, they start to, because they want to be successful. And they also don't want to, like, a lot of blame gets put on the teacher's head, right? Nobody's looking at the systems. And when you're having, sure, the teacher's not doing the things that they, you know, we want them to happen, but you can't blame them. Nobody can take all this information and, you know, filter it through and just come on the ground running with it. It's just like, it's impossible. So the system is really broken, in my opinion, for supporting this stuff. But then people look at that one teacher, or two teachers, or that one school, that two schools that did it, and like, man, they're exception. By definition, that's not normal. You have to make sure that you train and manage and lead to the mean, right? So most people can be successful, you know?
It's funny. I was just having a similar conversation with somebody yesterday about a conference coming up and who goes to this one particular conference. And I said, you got to keep in mind that the people going to that conference for this topic are the 5% in that school district who are really interested in it, right? So, and it's the same thing to what you're saying. Like, you got one or two people in that school who are really exceptional. All right, great. What about the rest of those people? Like, we got to get, you know, we got to figure out how to get everyone to be as best as they can in whatever area. I will say, you know, it's that time management piece. One of the most controversial blog posts I ever wrote, controversial in air quotes, was about using Google Forms when Google Forms was new, like a new tool. And this is, gosh, 10 years ago, longer than that now. Maybe 13, 14 years ago. Anyway, when Google Forms was new, and I was super excited about Google Forms because it was going to streamline for me the process of giving a particular quiz that everyone in my department had to give. Like it wasn't a choice. Like I had to give this quiz, and I could give it on paper or I could give it in Google Forms, right? So I decided I'm going to give it, and I wrote about it. I'm like, this is going to be awesome because I can grade these things. I had 100 and something kids on my roster that all did this quiz. Do it in Google Forms. I figured out the spreadsheet script to grade it all. I wrote a blog post about it. The comments I got on the blog post were like, why are you giving multiple choice? That's a terrible way to assess your students. I'm like, did you skip the part where I said I have to give this quiz? Like, I don't have a choice. Like, I'm going to take the lesser of the two evils, streamline this thing for myself, and get on with my day. You know, that's one of those things that, you know, and yeah, it took me a little bit of time. It took me some time to figure out the script because back then Google Forms didn't do automatic grading. It took me a little time to figure out that script, but I sunk that time in there. And you know what? I got that time back in spades because I could use that script any other time I had to use that quiz.
Yeah. Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah. It seems like you're talking about obviously the well-being of teachers. It sounds like a big time management issue. And what you did was created replicatable technology that opened up your time. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly what it was.
Do you have other examples of that you've used technology to do time management?
Oh yeah. So I'm a big fan of templates in your email, right? Like you got email beginning of the semester, right? You're going to get a whole bunch of similar questions from students and parents. Why not have a template ready to go in your email to answer that? And then you can quickly modify it, right? Like, okay, dear Mrs. Smith, thank you for your question about Jimmy, da 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 da, right? All that, you know, that's really great. You know, making video tutorials, you know, before it was, you know, we used to call it flip classroom. That isn't quite as trendy as it used to be, but you know, making a video that answers the question that your students are going to ask you 17 times, boom, you know, that's really helpful. I got started in this by writing a blog. Part of the blog was just so that I didn't have to, not Free Tech for Teachers, but the blog for my classroom. Part of that was just so that I had a place for all those resources for my students where I could put up copies of the notes, copies of the handouts, like that sort of stuff. You know, and I was doing that, you know, 16 years ago, as again, a piece that kind of streamlined my life a little bit.
Yeah. I think having, you know, it makes good sense. And I think we come back to, because that will make things easier, but even giving like, gosh, embedding in a teacher's year in the calendar at the beginning of the year, time, just do that stuff, you know, and then giving them the tools to actually do that stuff. Because still in the middle of things, that still takes that time. And to your point, you know, it's like, hey, you know, because you're a tech guy. Like for me, when we start talking about that stuff, I get anxiety, man. Like the simple stuff, I love Google Forms. There's so much you can do with Google Forms that I see. Now, learning how to do Google Forms, I always like, I'm an idea guy. I want somebody else to do that stuff, you know? And so if there was like seriously like a Richard in every school that could build this stuff for teachers and just, you know what I mean? Because I look at it that teachers are the stars of the show, right? Everybody else is supporting cast. Now, somebody recently commented when I posted on my LinkedIn page that said, well, students are the stars of the show. Well, we all understand that the result is supposed to be student achievement and support them, right? But you can't bring out the best in the students without bringing out the best in the teachers, right? So we have to give them all the tools that they need so they can equip the students. And when you say do it for the students, you cannot make it about the students without making it about those teachers in there. And I think there needs to be this massive shift and focus, because I hear student achievement, student results, make it about the students. I get it. Of course, that's always, we're always have that in mind, but you have to focus on making life easier for the teachers, you know, not just dumping stuff on them, doing the things that you just mentioned there to make their life easier. How do we do that, man? Like, how do we get from where we are at now to making life easier for the online stuff and for the technology? And because the technology is supposed to make their life easier, but you have to get over that hill first. Like, how can we make that hill smaller or eliminate it? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, I'm really happy to see that more and more schools do have someone on their staff whose job is technology coach, technology integrator, technology specialist, something along those lines. It's not IT. That's not the nuts and bolts of IT, but is focused on supporting teachers. There are some schools that were doing this 15 years ago. Now there's a lot more schools that are doing it. And that person needs to be not just a fire extinguisher, right? Not just, hey, you know, Mrs. Jones down the hall can't get her printer to work. You know, that's level one tech support I can get any high school kid to do. But I'm talking about the person who can help Mrs. Jones put into place that system for streamlining with Google Forms or Microsoft Forms, or, you know, helping Mrs. Jones develop a lesson plan that incorporates Google Earth as a way to help her fifth graders have a better understanding of where they live in the world and the world around them, like that sort of thing. And again, giving people time to do that is important as well. And recognizing that we all learn it at a very different pace, right? That, you know, teachers are just like students. We all learn at a very different pace, based on a lot of factors, you know, our background, our interests, right? Like if you drop me into a workshop on how to teach calculus right now, I can tell you, I'm going to be the one slowing that group down. And I'm going to need a lot more time than someone who's teaching calculus every single day. So we need to account for all those in 1 or 2 hours or even a day at the start of the school year, when you also have to, you know, finish your hazmat certification, your bloodborne pathogen certification, and your, you know, your fire drill procedure. That doesn't cut it. So I am really glad to see that more and more schools are putting in that person to help with that.
I think you bring up a really good point. And, you know, I don't know, you know, our background, Drew and I are both behavior scientists, we're behavior analysts, and look at stuff like that as a systematic approach, right? And so the best way, I think, when we go into a field, right, education, I spent 20 years in education, 20 plus years, is that we want to speak that language, right? So to your point, we have to think about teachers being just like students. And in schools, they have this tiered approach, right? So, you know, to behavior and academics, right? Tier one, tier two, and tier three. And that concept should absolutely be applied to teachers. 80 to 85% of teachers, if you have an evidence-based curriculum that you're teaching them, this strategy, this technology strategy, are probably going to get it, right? And so there's a simple way to follow up, get them to do it long enough, well enough, so that way they're like, oh, I'd like this. You know what I mean? If it's using one of these, I don't know what, you know, this might be outdated, but a whiteboard still a thing that's okay. Yeah. So teach them how to use, just do one activity on a whiteboard and they really like it, and teach them to do some pivotal things on it. So now there's a want for them to do it in the future, right? And they can see that my job's easier. The students are learning more. They're more engaged in this stuff. The principal's happy. All these positive reinforcers are occurring for them. Now you're going to have, you know, 15 to 20% that struggled with it. Okay, let's bring them back in. It might be a retrain, right? So instead of doing walkthroughs of all those, I concentrate my efforts on those 20%. And then out of those 20%, you're still going to have 1% to 5% that are struggling, and they might need some more follow-up, some more deep in-depth coaching. But it could be a really good way to, you know, leverage those resources. And there's no reason also that that tech guy, whoever that person is, can give that initial training on how to do it. But everybody in that school that's not in that class can walk through and just catch the teacher using the whiteboard. You know what I mean? And the, you know, the tech guy can, I'm using for lack of a better term, whoever that person is, can give them a cheat sheet that's on the wall next to that whiteboard that gives the key things that help them to remember these things, right? So there needs to be a systematic approach for that person to help those teachers. And then I think, you know, then it's all right. Hey, we've got this one lesson. Everybody knows how to do this one thing. Let's pick another one for in 2 more weeks. And then pretty soon people are involved. They know how to do it. And you don't have to do that anymore. It just becomes part of what we do in this school.
Yeah. I've done a lot of workshops over the years, you know, on a myriad of tech tools that have come and gone. Or I should say have come and gone, but have come and, you know, become a part of a school. And one of the things that I'll say, to your approach there, that you need to recycle that approach or restart that approach, every year or every semester.
Because, for every initiative.
Right. Because you're going to have, new staff coming to school, whether that's, you know, new teachers right out of college, or mm-hmm. that's new teachers coming in from a different school system.
Right.
You're going to have to keep doing that and not saying, oh, we did a Google Apps training in 2018, so we're all good. Right. Because that happens a lot. You know, that happens a lot. We did the training, or we had the smart board trainer come in for a day in 2020 in 2019, no one came in 2020, but came in 2019, and we don't need to do it again, right? Because we hope that the other teachers will share with the other teachers. And we can hope that the teacher in room 201 helps the teacher in 202, but it doesn't always happen, right? Like,
It's just, we need to just not do that. We need to do exactly like what you said before, and we need to treat the teachers like we teach the students. You don't just say, okay, you're fine because they say they know how to do it. You assess, right? And so there's a competency assessment. And if, like, using the whiteboard is a key competency, that's what's used at the school, then there could be a very simple assessment, right? Can you tell me what you're supposed to do? Can you show me what you're supposed to do? It could be a Google form, you know what I mean? Like, what are the correct things there? Sequence the stuff correctly. If you pass it, you're good to go. Then we don't need to give you this instruction, because we don't want to have to give you training if training is not the issue. Then we know they have the skills to do it. And if they're not doing it, we know it's a motivational issue, which is a whole different approach, right? That's just basic performance diagnostics. And like you said earlier, there could be those tools in there. Like you said, you're going to get the same 17 questions about things. We'll program that in the school, have that already as a tool for when people come in, and it's already like an asynchronous course that they can go, and they're given time to do it. You know what I mean? And maybe if they go through the course, they don't have to have a live course, right? Let them try that. That could be the tier one approach, because maybe some of the stuff is very simple. They don't need lots of rehearsal and feedback to get things right. And then again, maybe some of the things always require an in-person thing, you know?
Well, and I would say that part of it is not knowing what's available, right? Like, you need to know what is it. Like, if you don't know that you could create a template that will answer these common questions from parents, you will never make it, right? So part of it is just knowing what's out there. And that's kind of how I started with Free Tech for Teachers years ago, was just what is out there? Like, what's out there? Okay, now that it's out there, what the heck can you do with it? And why would you want to do this? Like, what's the benefit for your students? What's the benefit for you? So that's another component. And I think that's an important role of someone who has that job of tech coach or tech specialist in a school, is to make people aware of what the options are, of what things could you be doing? Unfortunately, I've seen in some cases where there's a tech person, tech coach, tech integrator in a school, and their job has been kind of watered down to just answering questions, you know, just being tech support and not being the tech leader, right? Not being the person who says, oh, you know, this is what's available, right? Yeah.
You're on mute, Drew. I see you're there.
Very strange. Is there anything out there right now that you could recommend that would help a teacher right away?
Help a teacher right away in what regard?
Time management, anything that technology could help them with. Like, what are you using?
So what I
could be a,
what
could I, be a number of things too. I'm sure there's more than one thing.
It is a number of things, and part of it is developing a system that works for you and your needs and your personality. I think personality is an important consideration in here, and not saying one size fits all. But what I do, you know, big thing for me is, as I've already mentioned, email templates, like having this boom, right? Because there's that factor. Like, I try to write emails that are grammatically correct, try to model that for my students and for their parents. So, you know, having that ready to go. Another thing that I will always try to do, I can't say I always do it, but I try to do, I try to have the resources I'm going to share with my students planned out in advance, a week in advance, and have them timed to be released in Google Classroom when necessary. And you can do that in Microsoft Teams. You can do that in any learning management platform. Just having that is really helpful to me in keeping in mind, okay, where am I going this week? You know, where do I need to be at on Tuesday? Where do I need to be on Thursday? Because again, life gets busy. I've got little kids and trying to think like, hey, dropping them off at preschool and then trying to be somewhere else 5 minutes later to, you know, so if you can sit down and plan those out, boom, that's really, really helpful. Any kind of assessment that you have to do, if it's something that you can have automatically graded, do it. And not every assessment can be automatically graded, right? There are plenty of things that are very, very valuable that I couldn't ever think of a way to automatically grade, my students' app design projects.
To your point earlier, there's no problem with giving multiple choice questions as like some level of formative assessment. You just don't want to stop there, right? We know that right. There needs to be more rigor and, you know, this, that, and the other. But like, as you're moving forward, like you said, man, I mean, grading, people who are listening to this who are not educators, and which, you know, there we do have a behavior analytic following, assessing grading is lengthy. It takes so much time because you have to read everything and then you have to respond to that. I mean, I teach at the university level, and just a couple of giving feedback on just one assignment takes a long time, man. People have no idea if not in education. I don't know, honestly, with having 20 kids, my last semester, I only had two people in my course, right? Two. And every time I had to grade something, like for those two, it took me an hour. Everything just to and multiply that. It's like crazy.
Yeah, you want to give your students meaningful feedback whenever you can, right? Like, and to your point, there are some things that, you know, but I'll take a common high school, middle school activity, vocabulary test, right? Vocabulary quiz. Do you know what these 10 words mean? You can automatically grade that, right? However, using those 10 terms in a sentence or using those 10 terms correctly in writing, that's something that you can't really automatically have done automatically. So the benefit of having done the vocabulary test and having it automatically graded is boom. Okay. The kids got that immediate feedback on whether or not they know the terms, but now I've got as a teacher a little more time so that I can give more meaningful feedback on that thing that I can't automatically grade.
But that's it. And I do think there's also things that can be done for rigor. So let's talk about like application of stuff. Well, you might not be able to apply it, right? Everything, but maybe there's performance-based scenarios. Here's the scenario, you know what I mean? And now you've been taught these tools. We know that you know what they do because you can sequence them and do all these things, right? You understand the order and the why and when to use those things. Well, you're trying to figure out when to use them. Now here's a scenario, now choose, right? But I mean, that stuff needs to be thought out. But once you think about it real well and you put it in there, then it still can be like, it's multiple choice, but now you can also with multiple choice, you can say, okay, you chose that. That was correct. Why did you choose it? So that's another selection that they can select from. So there are ways to deepen rigor in there. I'm not saying again, because I don't, Lord knows, I don't want to get all the protests that you got on your thing, you know. Of course we want to, but you're just looking in it for areas where they can shave off some of their time and free up and they can invest it in other places.
Yeah. And also Drew was asking about, you know, the other tools that I use. I make a lot of videos, both for my own YouTube channel for other teachers, but for other people to answer questions all the time. And I've done them for teaching computer science, did a lot, because a lot of times it's much easier to show a student in a line of code where they went wrong than it is to try to explain it in another way. I can just turn on my screencasting tool. So Screencastify or Screencast-O-Matic, both of those tools I use a lot, so that I can just make a quick little video. It can be 2 minutes and show a student, oh, here's where you went wrong. Or, you know, you want to make a quick lesson so that your students understand, a particular vocabulary term, right? Make that short video for them.
What's your YouTube, by the way? I know people, I can drop in the show notes, but I know people are going to be wondering right now.
It's just my name. Just search Richard Byrne. No relation to the guy from the Talking Heads.
That was actually going to be my question off air at the end.
No, a lot of people don't get that joke anymore.
Oh, yeah, look at this, man. You got 41,000 subscribers. That's awesome, brother.
Yeah. So there's a link to my chat there in the Zoom, or a link to the,
Look at that.
I got distracted by the David Byrne reference. Now I'm thinking of burning down the house. And,
you know. That's a good song, man.
I know. The thing about it is you can hear it more than once in a lifetime.
Oh, I gotcha. It was just his birthday a few days ago, I believe on Friday. Yep, I'm obviously a Talking Heads fan. So.
And he lives not that far. He actually, I shouldn't say he lives, but he has a home not that far away from where I live. Oh, wow. Only about, cool. 35 miles from where I live.
I mean, my goodness, you have a bunch of stuff on here, man. Even like the spinner wheel, random selection. That's something that I had to use something like that to change around cafeteria management when it was a problem. And we put a big screen up there to use it. That stuff is very powerful. You know, that Canvas stuff, how to blur faces in video, Geography Awareness Week. What a great thing, man. What a great resource you've produced here, brother. Wow.
Thanks.
Yeah. Look, how many videos you have on here?
What's that? I've been doing that for, 50, almost 15 years. So, you know, I've got, I don't know, well over 1,000 videos on there. And, one of the things that I always say is, you know, make a video. I am not going to win any beauty contest, but I put my face in the video anyway. And there's actually a reason for that. I did some research on this. People are more likely to watch the video if your face is in it than if your face is not in it. I don't know why. I think there's just because people want to have a little bit of there are exceptions to that pattern, but on the whole,
my face tends to scare people. They're like, I don't know. I have my face on a lot of graphics. Drew's like, stop doing that, man. You're scaring the people away.
But it's especially true for students. I will say that if you're making a short video for your class, for your students, put your face in it. Because then there's a little bit more of a personal connection to it than if your face is not in it and it's just someone droning in the background. So yeah, you know, and if you're watching this and you're or listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, but I don't want kids looking at my face or whatever. The best advice I ever got about that was get over yourself.
Like, I tell you, you're fairly prolific too. You're updating 8 days ago, 5 days ago, 2 days ago, 54 minutes ago. This is great.
Record video in Gmail. I mean, just so like how, you know, Google Arts and Culture for teachers, three easy way to record audio files. There's so much practical stuff in here, man. Wow. What? How to make QR codes. So what are your top three things from these, this, you know, smorgasbord, just buffet of amazing stuff that if the teacher were to come on there that, you know, I know they want to personalize it to their own thing, but all teachers need these three things. What are your favorites on there?
Oh gosh. I think every teacher needs to know how to, I'm going to keep going back to the email. Like you need to know how to manage your email, manage your inbox, right? So that means, can you use a filter, a template? Can you use some predicted responses? Yeah, I would say use that. I'm a huge fan of Canva. That's why I have 40-something tutorials on various features in Canva, because Canva can be used for all manner of things, from making your slides look better. I am not going to be confused with a graphic designer by any stretch of the imagination, but Canva I can use to make some really nice looking slide decks that are going to engage people a little bit more. You know, there's templates in there for making games on Canva. There's all kinds of stuff there. So I would say, you know, use Canva. And then the third one is, I think every teacher needs to know how to make a video in some way, shape or form. So I've got a bunch of tutorials in there about how to make short videos that your students will watch and respond to. You know, there's a tutorial I just did recently about Screencastify and how to build interactive questions into the video lessons that you make, so that students have to watch the video until a question appears, answer the question before they can go on to the next part of the video. So they're not just saying, yeah, Mr. Byrne, I watched the video. And you're like, oh yeah, really? Can you tell me three things about it? No. Okay, well, so here's a great option for you. So those are the three things. You know, the information I have about how to manage your inbox, the information about how to use Canva, and then the information about how to make a video that has interactive questions in it. I think are three things every teacher should know.
Wow, and guys, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're, you know, a professor at a university, this is for you too. This is not, you know, just public education. You know, a lot of universities are using Canva. And I know I am. I just do the basic stuff in it, man. And these videos, they're short. You know, they're 2 minutes, 4 minutes. You know, maybe a couple are like 10 minutes, but it's most of them are like 2 to 5 minutes, man. What a wealth of knowledge you're putting out there for free, brother. You are really talking the talk and walking the walk, man. Really well done. Thanks, man. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, man. I am so excited to put this, you know, podcast out there, this episode out there, just so teachers have, you know, anybody listening to this can use it. And you don't even have to be a teacher, man. Whoever, you know, behavior analyst, or you're listening to this, anybody, there are some really practical stuff that folks can use from this. You know, Richard, if people want to get in contact with you, or, you know, if you have something that, you know, you want people to take a look at, how do they find you, or how do they find, you know, whatever it is that you have to give besides your YouTube, which I'll make sure it's in the show notes.
So YouTube, obviously, freetechforteachers.com is the website I'm best known for. You can follow me on Twitter at RMByrne, B-Y-R-N-E. You can Google me. If you Google me, you'll find me. You'll find a guy who writes books for children. That's not me. And you'll find a guy who runs a karate studio. Also not me.
Well, now what if you're like, so I'm always looking from a leadership perspective. I'm like, man, I would love to have, you know, Richard come out to my school and just like set up a system with using Canva or using your emails or whatever, just to help teachers. to make their job easier. Like, to me, it's like, all right, I know we like sometimes you do special things where a masseuse comes in, right? And they give 15 minutes or the masseuse. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. I wish
I'm not giving you a massage.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, brother. Well, what's wrong, man? My back aches, man. but you know, like to have Richard come in and spend a day and like equipping teachers with things that'll make their jobs easier. I would think that you're really going to get a lot of return on investment there. So if a school leader wants to reach out to you directly, is it LinkedIn a good place or email or what?
LinkedIn or send me an email, richardburn@freetechforteachers.com is my email address. Yeah. And I make house calls or school calls as the case may be. I don't do them quite as much as I used to just because, one, COVID, two, I have two little kids at home and, I limit my road trips about once a month. I used to do them like once a week. I'm always happy to make house calls.
But you're also available virtually, you know, there's nothing.
I do a lot of virtual stuff. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just did a virtual session for a group of teacher librarians in British Columbia a couple weeks ago. I ended up working with a fair number of libraries and public libraries or school libraries. I do a fair bit of work there as well.
Well, you're a real dude, man. You're authentic. You're putting good stuff out there in the world, man. It's been a real pleasure to have you on. Hopefully we'll get to meet in person someday.
Yeah, that would be great. This went by really quick.
Because it was fun conversation, brother. Stay on one second, okay?